Canucks Central Friday. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We are a presentation of your local Grip Auto and Tire location. Friendly service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. You're listening live on the Sportsnet app, in your car on AM 650 or 96.9 HD3 on your FM dial. Appreciate you. You can also listen on your smart speaker at home. Hey, play Sportsnet 650. It's that simple. Also on demand anytime, anywhere with your favorite podcatcher. Subscribe and leave a review. That way you never miss an edition of Canucks Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. The Battle of Alberta has come to an end.
It is over.
I did shed a single solitary tear. I was like, well, that's over. Now we're not going to get the same kind of excitement.
I mean, who knows? I mean, if it's Colorado and Edmonton, it could be fun.
Could
the Blues still have something to say about that?
Blues and Avalanche going on tonight, 5 o'clock. Puck drop, we'll bring you that here on 650. So, like, that game, these playoffs in general, there's been a lot of, like, lead changes. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of, like, big goal comebacks. Like, how often in the playoffs you see 2 or 3 goal comebacks? But, you know, on consecutive nights, we saw multi-goal comebacks, one from St. Louis and then here from Edmonton, who seemed to do it, they did it 3 times against Calgary in this series. It's kind of a continuation of the regular season where there's been a lot of goals scored, Sat, and it does make for better hockey in the end, or more entertainment, maybe not better hockey.
Well, the entertainment's certainly been good, and you're right about the hockey at times has been spectacular. But when it's Connor McDavid and you have Draisaitl doing what he's doing, and there had been a lot of exciting moments in that series. The first game, it was a sloppy game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it ended up being, 7-6 or whatever it was. But outside of that, it was a pretty good hockey overall. I mean, the other game, Game 5, it was a tale of two halves. The first half was essentially what Calgary wanted, super low event, and maybe they squeak out a low event hockey game win or something. And then goaltending started getting shaky. And then things opened up.
As soon as I tweeted that it was Markstrom's best game of the series. Jinx!
Yep.
That was not great. Sorry, Calgary fans. Not sorry. Not actually. All right, we'll get to more on the Battle of Alberta. And yes, our thoughts on whether or not it was a kick. But a couple of things on the Vancouver Canucks. Jim Rutherford spoke with Donnie and Dolly today. A lot of the same things we've heard from Jim Rutherford, but there was, there's a situation with JT Miller and Bo Horvat, Sat. As we know, they're both coming to the end of their contracts at the end of the next season. Both are undergoing contract negotiations with the team to see if there is a fit long-term at the correct price that works for both team and player. Now, we've long talked about this and sort of hinted that Bo Horvat is likely to remain a Vancouver Canuck, and it's a little bit more dicey on the JT Miller front because it's just going to cost more money, and that could be a problem for the Canucks. Today, Jim Rutherford kind of said similar things to Donnie and Dolly.
Yeah, and he said, too, that there's a number in mind for JT. You know, that there's a number in mind that they think could work. It's up to whether JT would be willing to accept that number or not. And that's kind of the interesting thing that came out, that it's very, very clear already, like I mentioned before, where things may be headed. And they kind of, as the interview went on, Rutherford kind of mentioned that they're in the process of putting together contracts, as in putting together legitimate offers here.
Right.
And once they do, it'll be pretty clear pretty quickly whether there's going to be an agreement or not.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if there's, like, how much of a back and forth there is there. Like I said, when the
like,
whole...
Like, would you need to have a back and forth? Like, how big does the gulf have to be before you're like, you know what? It's all good.
Well, early reports on the Penguins conversations with Chris Letang and Evgeny Malkin have been like, with Letang, the number seems to be pretty close. With Malkin, not so much. Mm-hmm. So, you can kind of get a sense of where those things are going and how much of a gap there is to bridge. But I said this at the time of what happened with Boudreaux. if this is how they're handling the Boudreaux discussion and not really going down the road of an extension, just saying you have a contract, you're keeping it, they're kind of putting their stake in the ground of, you know, maybe we'll have a little bit of give, but we're not playing too many games here. Like, it, our offer is going to be pretty close to our best offer, or it is what it is in some situations. And it just seems like it's going to be a harder bargain for players in Vancouver these days under this new regime.
Yeah, and I think that the line in the sand is going to be adhered to a lot more. Now, we did see this team walk away from some very key players not too long ago, but the...
How much of that was the front office and how much of that was just ownership saying, nope?
Well, in a pandemic year.
Yeah.
That impacted that. Otherwise, you're right. I mean, we have seen this team, you know, be like, you know what? If we have to pay extra, we will, because we want the guy. It doesn't matter. You saw it with a number of contracts. This management team is not going to do that.
Yeah.
And with JT, it's going to be pretty evident pretty quickly. So I think when you listen to what he had to say about JT Miller, it goes back to what we've talked about, the draft.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially it. It's the draft.
That is the deadline. So you know what? We will go to that Miller clip here. Jim Rutherford on Donnie and Dolly today on JT Miller and just how far negotiations are right now.
We'll see where that goes, and then decisions will be made at that time. But... you know, everybody thought he was going to be traded at the trade deadline, and he wasn't, and he continued on. He had a great year for the Canucks, a career year for himself, and he's got a lot of good hockey left in him. And so we're going to go through the process here, see where the contracts go, and then make a decision. We're already in a tough situation cap-wise, and we're trying to gradually untangle that so we can add new players. And so any player that has a contract that's up or in the future, we're going to project where they fit within our cap so we can add more players and make this team better. So it's not just about JT, it's for all players.
So there is Jim Rutherford and making it about the team more than just about JT. Like, we need to build a better hockey team, and in order to do that, we need to create some salary cap flexibility. And for the 7,000th time in the last 3 months, mentions how they're going to have to continue to do that in order to just add new players, never mind keeping the ones they already have.
Well, and that's the conundrum that they find themselves in. They want to get better, but they realize they can't really get better without making some tough decisions, but
yep,
they can't make too many tough decisions.
Yeah.
Because if you do, then all of a sudden you find yourself back in square one again. And that's the challenge of this year. And on the JT thing, and when you hear him talk about Bo in comparison to how he talks about JT, it's very clear that when you compare the two, where the feelings are, as far as how likely they believe it is you can get something done with Bo versus how likely or unlikely it might be to get something done with JT Miller. Just have a listen to what he says, Rutherford, when asked about Bo Horvat.
Yeah, I really like Bo. I've always liked him back to his junior hockey days. And that is very capable of being a good captain. And so there's been good discussions with him after the season. He had a good year this year, 30-some goals, 31 goals, I believe. And he's got a lot of good hockey left in him. He's a character guy. He's a center iceman that's hard to find. And we believe that he should be part of our team going forward.
So there is Jim Rutherford on Bo Horvat. We believe he should be a part of our team going forward. A lot more forthcoming on Bo than he has been with Miller.
Yeah, a lot more forthcoming on it. And it's very clear with Bo, and this was kind of the sense we got a while back, that it's going to be easier to get something done with Bo versus getting something done with JT Miller. And
yeah,
there's always an understanding about that. So I think that plays a part into it. But if there was more uncertainty around Bo coming back, he may have hedged a bit more. Like he did with JT. Because with JT, it's not a certainty at all.
Yeah.
And as much as Rutherford made it clear they like him, they want to bring him back, he even, a bit later in the interview, he kind of brought up the example about maybe you got to trade a JT to get a draft pick back. Like, he's bringing it up, so he knows, or at least feels, it seems like, it's not very clear on JT's front.
He's setting the table for the fan base. You know, yep. Like, don't be surprised if this happens.
Yes.
If we lose our highest scoring player this year, do not be surprised. They've set that standard for Canucks fans, and they've sent that message out there. Now, sure, not everybody is as diehard, and there's a lot of season ticket holders that just show up, and they're going to be there in September and at a preseason game, be like, where's JT Miller?
Yeah.
Or they're going to be at the home opener, like, who's that guy wearing number 9? That's not JT.
Right.
You know? For the most part, Canucks fans, like, they should know by now that JT is very much a non-guarantee to be a Vancouver Canuck come October.
Absolutely. And now, one thing I do wonder about, and this is something we won't find out for another few weeks because the playoffs are still ongoing, but what happens when they make that first initial contact with these guys? And with Besser, of course, you know, we'll talk more about Duke, sadly, who passed away. Our thoughts are with the Besser family, of course, and wish them nothing but the best. With him, it seems a bit more clear about where things are headed. But whereas with, you know, Horvat, and whereas with JT Miller, for instance, those guys are coming off such big years.
Yeah.
What if, like, for instance, best intentions, what Rutherford said. What if Boeskamp comes back and says, we got a center here who's 26.
Yeah.
He just scored 31 goals.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Kevin Hayes making 7 and change. Look at the other guys making almost $8 million. We think our guys should make this much. And maybe that is going to come as a shock to, say, management, because they're like, whoa, maybe we thought, I mean, I don't know. Is that a possibility or not? Or is it a foregone conclusion that Bo is going to play ball?
There seems to be a feeling that Bo will give some kind of a hometown discount.
I think we can all safely assume he will give some kind of a discount. The question is,
how much?
What from what basis is he giving a discount from?
Yeah.
Is he giving a discount from, say, making 6.5 to 6?
Yeah.
Or is he giving you a discount from making 7.5 to 7?
Yeah.
Or 7 from 8 to 7.5? I'm just wondering. I'm sure he'll take less, whatever that is, 100K, 200K, 500K, whatever it is per year, he'll take less to stay here. The question is, what's your starting point for that?
And
has that changed?
Yeah. And if you go the full 8-year term, how much are you shaving off that average annual value?
Yeah.
Is there enough of a, if that is the discussion or that ends up where it goes, is there enough of a discount on the year-to-year average annual value to warrant giving the full 8-year term to a player, to any player, but certainly in this case, Bo Horvat? Jim has pretty much already said it clear to us a month ago when we had him at the end of the season. They don't feel too comfortable term-wise for aging players. He had the example of, you know, you expect the first 3 years to be pretty good, and the 3 years after that, not as much, but you got to balance that with where your window is and different factors. So, you know, I've kind of always been led to think that they're not too comfortable going more than 6 years with JT Miller.
Yeah.
And that's, it's not a, we're choosing Bo over Miller, and it won't be that if that ends up being how this plays out. It's more of, we think we can do more with this setup rather than that setup, right? Mm-hmm. We think we can do more with Bo Horvat making this much than we can JT making this much and really hampering our ability to do some other things with the roster.
The amount of money for each player is going to be different. Like, even if we think Bo is a guy who's in the $7 million range, we know that JT is a guy who's in the $9 million range. Mm-hmm. It's probably a couple million more per year. But my bigger question, though, is if you're coming back, let's say you're investing in JT or you're investing in Bo, you're not investing in both.
Yeah.
Especially when you start looking at what the contract terms are going to look like.
Yeah.
So is there a world where they can get all three of those guys signed?
There is. It's just unlikely.
And, I mean, it does come down to Besser more than anything as far as, is it going to be the 7.5 qualifying or is it going to be less?
Yeah.
I still think it'll be less on a multi-year deal. But if all of a sudden you have to go down a road where it's 7.5 and JT's coming in at close to 8 or if not more, and Bo's coming out at 7, it becomes hard.
Yeah.
It becomes really, really difficult when all of a sudden you got four guys making $7 million plus.
The math just doesn't really work. It does if the players are good enough.
Well, that's kind of my question as far as, is that amount of money worth it for you to lock in your centers? Like, yeah. These are your centers. Like, Pedersen's one guy, and then the other guy long-term is going to be either Bo or JT.
I wouldn't feel comfortable. We've talked about this so often, like going more than seven with Bo. Like, I think Bo's number's got to start with a six.
I don't even like the seven. Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. But as far as JT himself, too, there's the other question. How many years can he play center? He's really good, but he's good defensively.
Yeah.
And how many of these years is he going to play down the middle for you? And if he is coming back, does that not also mean you got to have a third guy that's going to be pretty close in a couple of years that in case he's got to move to the wing, he can move up and play center for you?
Well, you can pay the top four or five guys on your roster a ton of money. It's just incumbent on them actually being really good.
I mean, yeah, I get it. But for a team that, for this group, to all of a sudden max out all the guys, have they done enough for you to feel that good about it, to max them all out?
Ultimately, why, you know, they are having this discussion.
How much better are you getting if you're maxing them all out?
Well, JT's not getting better. You know, and there's already a ceiling on Bo pretty much as well. Like, I know he took another step this year goal scoring wise, but is there another level Bo Horvat can get to? I have my doubts. You know, can he clean up some different parts of his game? Sure, but I think we've kind of seen maxed out Bo Horvat. This was maxed out JT Miller. It's hard to commit a ton of money to those guys knowing that you just saw kind of their best seasons. And the point I was making, like, yeah, you can afford paying $9.5 million or nine plus to four or five guys on your roster, but they better be damn good.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's a reason Tampa Bay gets away with it, because Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Andre Vasilevsky, and Brayden Point generally hold up their end of the bargain of being game-breaking hockey players all the time to an extreme degree. And this Canucks team, yes, they have really good players, but none of them are anywhere near the class of any of the players I just mentioned.
Not even close, but as far as also how you match up against Edmonton.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you should build your team to match up against Edmonton, but also look at it and say, you got to make McDavid and Dreisaitl in this division for a while, it seems like, especially with the success you're having, all the talk of McDavid wanting out, that's going to go more and more quiet the farther they go into the postseason.
Well, at least three more years.
Yes.
That's what Dreisaitl's got left on his deal.
So you got three more years of these guys. How do you get past them in your division? And are you good enough down the middle to get past that team?
Yeah. I mean, look, Calgary's a more well-built team, as we talked about, but it didn't matter in that series, Battle of Alberta.
Well, here's where it gets interesting with Calgary, because I like Calgary, but one of my questions with that team has also been, as good as people make them out to be, they're also not that strong down the middle. Like, none of their, like, Goudreau's and Tkachuk are the two best players. They're wingers. Lindholm had a good year, but even so, in the postseason, he wasn't really able to really carry. Backlund was all right.
I mean, Lindholm's had now, like, 2 point-a-game seasons.
Yes.
With Calgary.
Yes. But was he able to elevate his game or make a difference on his own?
Well, it probably doesn't help him that Gaudreau and Tkachuk just kind of went AWOL in this series, especially Tkachuk.
But my question is, who's a guy that steps up? My question is, like, on this team, when you're looking at Edmonton, for you to be able to beat teams like Edmonton or even Colorado or even a team like Tampa, for instance, your best player, you have to have guys who are able to take over a game on their own.
I mean,
JT's a guy that can do that on his own, but defensively isn't matching up against anybody. Is Bo a guy that can do that? I know he did it against the Blues in that game, but we talked about that as well the other day and about, you know, how some of those goals came to be.
We've seen Bo shadow McDavid sort of well in some preseason or some regular season games, not all. But Travis would use him as a matchup guy against Connor in some games. Didn't always work.
Yeah. My question, though, is even if you're committing to these guys, either one of these guys, you're locking in long-term, and is that good enough down the middle? You feel good about Pedersen. He's able to elevate and get better. He's so young still, and he's shown in the postseason a couple of rounds that he can be one of the best players, if not the best player in a series. So he's capable of doing it.
Well, you're like, this might sound crazy, but if you're projecting out like what it looks like 5 years from now, like, okay, Pettersson's still our top guy and Bo is probably going to be down to our third line center at that point.
But who's your second line center? That guy doesn't exist.
Not here yet.
Yeah.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Lots of thoughts on the Vancouver Canucks and their build after those Jim Rutherford comments. We'll get more into the Battle of Alberta. Yannick Hansen is going to join us coming up after 3:30. And on the Calgary note, was this the end of their window? We'll discuss that coming up a little bit later on in Canucks Central as well. Bet on hockey like never before with Play Now Sports, your local BC sports book. Let's bring in our next guest. It's Matt Lee of BCLC. What's happening, Matt?
Not much, guys. Just recovering from yesterday's exciting battle with Alberta. You guys mentioned it there. My jaw still off on the floor from Nathan McKinnon's goal in Game 5 as well. So let's see what tonight brings for Game 6.
The world wants to know, Matt. Was it a kick or was it not a kick?
I think Drance tweeted it best. He said Otto kicked it in back in 89, and now karma sort of reared its ugly head about 23 years later. So I tend to think that it wasn't a kick. It didn't look like a distinct kicking motion to me. You've seen goals called before with a lot less, but I didn't think it was a kick personally.
Well, I mean, it's one of those big debates that has been raging on sports radio and on social media and group chats the past 24 hours. But as far as the action on that series, how much the bettors get into the Battle of Alberta?
Oh, yeah. Battle of Alberta was the most popular series in terms of the second round for bettors. And you can hardly blame them, really, because the Calgary Flames going in were pretty significant favorites to win that series. I think we saw Edmonton in their previous round against LA getting all the way to Game 7. It could have swung either way. I think a lot of people saw that the Edmonton Oilers were huge underdogs coming in, and bettors were getting on big time with the Oilers, so they've walked away with a significant chunk of cash now that the Oilers have cleaned up the Flames in 5. Probably you came away with a lot more if you bet the Oilers in 5 as well.
So tonight we've got Blues and Avs. Our listeners will be able to hear it here on Sportsnet 650. Avs unable to close the deal in that Game 5 despite having the 3-goal lead. And then again, as you mentioned, the Nathan McKinnon goal. Does the market favor the Avs getting it done here in St. Louis tonight?
Yeah, it certainly does. The Blues still moneyline underdogs at 2.4. The Avs favored at 1.6. And this is, again, despite the fact that the game is being played in St. Louis. I think part of why that's the case is that the Avs did take both road games in somewhat convincing fashion, winning by 3 in both games 3 and 4. So that's probably why we're seeing still the Avs as the heavy favorite. I'll also say the Avs are still heavily favored to win this series. Mm. But as you and I just discussed last week, guys, if bettors are looking for the Hail Mary play here, the Blues are at 6.5 odds to win the series. And if somehow the Blues can pull another rabbit out of the hat tonight, you got to think a winner-take-all Game 7, it's a virtual coin flip, so you never know.
Well, and what about this Rangers and Canes series? I mean, now the Canes have taken the lead, but the Rangers have Shesterkin. What are the odds of the Rangers still being able to get back and winning this series?
Yeah, the Rangers are definitely hanging around, giving the Hurricanes all they can handle. And part of it, of course, is because of Igor Shesterkin. But tomorrow's Game 6 at 5 o'clock, it's a virtual coin flip, at least bet-wise. Both teams are 1.9 on the money line. It could go either way. I will add as well the total on goals for this game, 5.5. There's been 5 goals or less for every single game this series. So for bettors looking to cash in on the total here, you might find some value on the over-under.
You know, This might be a weird question, but is it Connor McDavid and everybody else for the Conn Smythe?
I mean, I certainly think it has to be at this point. You know, you've seen what Connor McDavid has done so far in the Stanley Cup postseason. I think you got to throw a little bit of love to Leon Draisaitl's way as well. I mean, we've seen how many points he put up in that series. Again, we've talked about Nathan McKinnon and what he's been able to do for the Colorado Avalanche, putting the team on his back as well. But I think it's safe to say at this point that it's a clear-cut Connor McDavid and everybody else. Andre Vasilevsky, you know, we've seen him perform very well in those elimination games. He's right there at 6.5. Cale Makar also having a pretty good postseason himself. He's also at 6.5.
Well, Matt, we're saving the best for last, and we're not quite into NHL offseason trade season quite yet, but we're getting a bit closer as the playoffs get nearer and nearer to a close, and you guys have some Canucks trade markets out there, don't you?
Yeah, we certainly do, and we've had those trade markets posted up for the first time since the trade deadline came and went. And you know, guys, right now, odds-wise, we are a lot closer today than we ever have been at seeing a JT Miller trade in Vancouver. And, you know, we've talked about it for months on end. The odds on the Canucks to trade Miller before the start of last season, or before the start of next season, rather, are at 1.87. Comparatively, prior to the trade deadline, they were at 3.5, and at this time last year was at 5.0. So bettors who are embracing this bet are doing so knowing the Canucks and the Miller camp will sit down. They'll talk about a potential contract. But the value on a JT Miller trade is at a point where there's an expectation among bettors that Miller won't be a Canuck by the start of next year.
Bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC sportsbook, and check out all the numbers over at PlayNow.com. Matt, appreciate this as always. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, guys. Thanks.
There is Matt Lee of BCLC. Yannick Hansen is coming up. We'll have more on the Battle of Alberta next here on Canuck Central. Canuck Central, a presentation of your local Grip Auto and Tire location. Friendly service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. Yannick Hansen going to join us in a moment, and he is brought to you by the Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. So, Battle of Alberta last night, Sat. The Blake Coleman disallowed goal. Is it a goal? Should it have been a goal? Was it a kick? Was it not a kick?
I think based on the rule, you can surmise that it's a kick.
Right.
So if you look at the rule,
yeah,
you can come to the conclusion it's a kick. What I think is that play should be allowed. So moving forward,
yeah,
in the future, that play should not be disallowed. Currently, as it stands, I get the justification for it.
Mm-hmm.
But as a general rule, in a general sense, I think that goal should be able to stand. I don't think that goal should be taken off. But I understand why they did based on the rule.
It's to me, it's a bogus call. The rule, as it is stated, a goal cannot be scored on a play where an attacking player propels the puck with his skate into the net using a distinct kicking motion. I don't see a distinct kicking motion there from Blake Coleman, but
flexes the leg out.
Let's ask the expert. It's Yannick Hansen joining us here on Canuck Central as he does every Friday. Was it a kick? Was it not a kick?
It was absolutely no goal. If you don't believe it, I'll take you on the ice and I'll show you why. The way he's skating towards the net, there's no way his left leg should go that way if he's trying to clear the post. The only way it's going that way is because he's trying to move the puck into the net with his foot. He's probably trying to make it, accidentally on purpose hitting it.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he's skating, there's no chance that's he knows exactly what he's doing. Whether or not he's kicking it, I think, is irrelevant at that point. You're trying to score with your skate, moving your skate towards the puck in a stopping kicking motion, whatever it is. So I don't think it should count based on just those things. And again, as a player, right away you could see what he's trying to do. That there's no accidental, oh, I'm trying to stop here.
Mm.
No, he's moving his leg in that direction. He's not trying to clear the post in any way. Like I said, accidentally on purpose, trying to knock the puck in. Unfortunately for him, it looked like the puck would have gone in anyways. I will say the only thing you can really try to do as a player, if you want to do that, is you got to get the puck with the tip of your skate, which is a lot harder. And then you're all in, because then you're skating right into the net instead. But as soon as you turn that skate sideways, when they change the rules, those things, they get called back now. And that's just, as long as the rules are the way they are right now, they're 100%, that's not a goal.
See, our listeners will never pass up an opportunity if they see one, and they're saying, ask Hansen when he wants to schedule ice time to show us. I think they want to get on the ice with you, Yannick. But no, but like I'm with you on it, but I'm with you. I thought it was a kick too. Like, I get why you call that a no goal. But do you think that should be allowed generally? Should they change the rule? Or do you think those goals should not be allowed?
I would love for that to be allowed.
Right, yeah.
I get it. You can't swing your leg and kick it like you're kicking a soccer ball, but directing the puck... gliding, stopping it in, sliding it, angling—all of these things—it's part of the game. Yeah, you can't use your hands, throw it in the net. I get that, and I don't know if they took it out initially because they were afraid of guys getting cut because people will come in with their skates and try to kick it in. Nobody does that anyways because, like I said, it's very, very hard to kick straight on a puck. You only have the blade there. You got to go sideways, and then you're not really kicking anymore. Then you're just kind of gliding the blade. So I wouldn't mind them changing that rule. I get it if it has something a little bit to do with safety. They don't want the skates in there around the goalies and stuff like that. But I would have liked it to be able to count it, but under the current rules, it shouldn't count. So it's yeah, what do you say? There's two sides to this.
What was it a few years ago? Was it Patrick Sharp who tried to head the puck into the net and it got called back as well? I don't know. I just feel like in general, we want more goals in hockey. You should be able to direct it in with a body part as much as anything else, no?
Yeah, and that's what I was just reiterating. Like yeah. You said, you want goals. This is one of the ways where it's a skill too to be able to find that puck and direct it with your skates. Because a lot of times your stick is tied up. And like I said, yeah, we don't want guys kicking full out like you're playing soccer. But that's not what he was trying to do there. He is going with his skate. He is directing it. He is purposely trying to score with his skate. And yeah, I think if you change the rule, it should count. But like I said, the way the rules are right now, it shouldn't. Would it bring that many more goals? I don't know. It's once in a blue moon that we get these ones. So it's not like it's going to open up that many more scoring chances. You still see these guys on the power play. They still line their stick up and then they put their skates angling right after. So you have almost a ginormous blade and you just shoot it in off, which is kind of the same thing. But obviously that's allowed. So again, if you're talking about wanting to score more goals, there's probably other avenues I'd go down in order to do that.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, actually. And you know what I find interesting, too? I mean, the problem I think here more than anything is the inconsistency in how this has been called. Because we've seen so many different videos of goals being allowed that have very similar motions.
Well, there's too much gray area in the rule. And I think that's part of the problem.
I think that's been the biggest problem, though, maybe, Yannick. And I think that's where a lot of the frustration comes from fans, too. And I guess from players that it doesn't always get called like this.
Yeah.
No, and that's what we used to say. Like, sometimes you're on the right end and sometimes you're on the wrong end of these calls, and it tends to even out. The problem for Calgary is this is the end of the year for them because of what it is.
Yeah.
But they've probably gotten a call somewhere along the season where, well, that's the other team was complaining about this. It's just because it's magnified right now. And talking gray areas, well, penalties were one of the gray areas that the league cut out back in, say, 04, 05, where you say, no, there's no more sticks up right now. It's either it's a penalty or it's not. As soon as the stick comes up, so this is where those gray areas still comes in, and now it's on the video review. Sometimes we see these reviews running too long, for my opinion. I think it was at the Tampa game where they had two reviews in a short span, and one of them was very, very long. I don't know if that's beneficial to the game. I get it. You want to get the calls right. But we also need some sort of flow. And again, human error is to some extent part of the game as well. So again, finding some way of navigating this where you're still getting the right calls, but not at the expense of sitting and watching on a TV screen for extended period of time.
So Calgary, you know, we looked at them as you know, a well-built team. They had their identity. They played so well during the regular season, and they just like they had a way of winning hockey games. And then it just completely went out the window once this series started against the Edmonton Oilers. Even the game they won, it was 9-6. Like, that's not a game that Calgary was used to having this season. You know, I know Jacob Markstrom didn't make a ton of saves and he wasn't at his best in this series. Is it hard to keep your identity when you're just not getting saves, Yannick? Does it kind of just throw off your team because, well, we can't play a low event hockey game because we're not getting any saves. We got to score some goals at the other end.
Yeah, it definitely got pulled away from the way Calgary wanted to play this. There's no question about that. If it was tied down, they probably had a better chance. Obviously, they would have a better chance. The way this thing plays out, it just played right into Edmonton's hand. McDavid and Draisaitl did just about whatever they wanted to. Mm-hmm. And then when you're not getting the saves as well, because truth be told, this is how they play. This is how they play through the entire regular season. The changes have always been come playoff time. Things get locked down. You're allowed to hook a hold a little bit more. You're allowed penalties doesn't get called out as frequent. So you're able to contain these guys that are often very hard to contain in the regular season. And that's why you see them normally disappearing. Well, that wasn't the case now. And again, magnitude by the fact that Markey wasn't making a lot of saves. All of a sudden, it seemed like no lead was ever safe. 3-goal lead, 4-goal leads. They'd still just bound right over the boards and produce a grade A scoring chance or a goal. And they were coming so frequent that you're almost sitting there. It doesn't really matter the score because these guys can score 2 or 3 shifts in a row and then it's right back to even again. And going back to the point that it's definitely not the way Calgary wanted to play, I think everybody who's had any experience with Sutter there, he knows that that's not his style of game. He likes it nice and tight, locked down, and keep it that way. But right now, it was free flow, McDavid end-to-end, and Calgary can't compete with that. It's that simple.
No question about that. Now, I wanted to get your thoughts on the game winner in overtime. And, I mean, it's good on McDavid to pressure Hanifin the way he did. I thought it was a soft play by Hanifin to turn that puck over. But a lot of talk's been around Johnny Gaudreau, him standing along the walls. There was 3 Flames forward a bit down low. He was along the walls, didn't do anything. Didn't engage into the battle. Next thing you know, puck goes into the middle and McDavid scores. What did you make of that play in that sequence?
Yeah, again, it's... technically, it's not his guy. Draisaitl is halfway up the half wall there. And as a forward, you want him contained there. You don't want him walking up further because then you're pulling the D away. So you want him there and further down. And then he is your center or the D's guy, whoever's the third guy, the third forward helping out the D's. In terms of that play, like... I don't think it should have been a goal either. It's McDavid posting in, but it was a weak shot.
Yeah.
There's so many things. Is it who gets Shugan on Darnell Nurse's goal as well in the first period? You see somebody jumping on Draisaitl's back and he shifts him off. Like you can't. You can say, yeah, you didn't do a good job, but you're attacking these guys and they shake you off anyway, and all of a sudden you're asking Gaudreau to take the puck away from Draisaitl. He's not going to be doing that.
Yeah.
That's why he's a winger. That's why he's standing up on his point or like I said, containing it, and then the other guy's got to get the puck away from it. It's always easy to pick apart goals because when you get scored on, often something goes wrong, and often it's more than 1 or 2 things. So it's very easy to afterwards slow it down frame by frame. Oh, you weren't there. You were supposed to be 3 steps to the left and you're stuck in this lane. Then this never happened. But that's just not tenable. So again, starting to blame it on one player here or there, that's not the case. They got outplayed. They couldn't hold a lead. They couldn't make a save. There are so many things wrong with this series from Calgary's perspective that they simply just didn't deserve to win.
Well, one thing I also found really interesting about their defense, and you could see why they wanted Tanev back, because their guys are not great at defending in zone. They spend a lot of time in the offensive zone, but with Tanev out, they really did not have a lot of good in-zone defenders, and even a guy like Hanifin struggled a bit. I mean, isn't that kind of fascinating about the postseason when the game changes so much that if you don't have guys that know how to defend their own zone, that really becomes a big, big issue for a team. Because Calgary is good, but each individual defenseman outside of Tanev isn't exactly great at in-zone defending, it seems.
No, but it's also very, very hard. Because let's say you load up with Tanevs,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden we play a different team. So that's why you want variety. You want you want the Goodbranson in your lineup. You want the Shillington. You want the Tanev. You want the Anderson. So you can play every style of game out there. It doesn't matter what the opponents play. We can still play you guys. And then it's up to the individual to raise their game. And certain games, it's easier for certain players, and other games, it's easier for other players. And that's where, again, they got exposed a little bit here because of the fact the way the game was played at such a high pace. And it was McDavid and Draisaitl, and then they were just finding Kane and Hyman and all these guys all the time, that it seemed like Calgary got pulled away from what had made them very, very successful for 82 games and to some extent the first round of the playoffs. All of a sudden, you got pulled out of that, and now you're forced to play on another team's premises, and that's hardly ever a good idea, or good things come from that.
You know, the one player that shocked me in these playoffs, now I know he ends up 10 points in 12 games, so you look at the stat sheet, that doesn't look terrible for Matthew Tkachuk. But they were kind of concentrated, right? He had the hat trick here in game one, didn't have a point in the final three games of this series. I mean, for a player that is kind of the prototype playoff guy, Yannick, Matthew Tkachuk was very, very quiet, not just in this series, but even against Dallas. What'd you make of his performance?
Yeah, the beginning against Dallas, he got pulled completely away from his game. All of a sudden, he was a tough guy. And yeah, he can beat up Klingberg if he wants to, because he's tougher and stronger than that guy. But Matthew Tkachuk has put up 40 goals, 100 points, and that line has been on a tear. Play hockey. Don't worry about having to beat up a small Swedish defenseman. Play your game and you'll win this series. It took him three games before he got away from that and all that antics. And I get that's part of his game. That's part of who he is. But at some point, you need to see, okay, where are my strength and where am I benefiting my team? So that, to me, did not look good. He corrected that and started playing. And the last five or four games against Dallas, I thought he was better. But again, that line was just neutralized outside of Lindholm. Goudreau, yeah, he had his points too, but often he was few and far in between, I felt like, where that line had been so dominating for the entire season, and they were very, very hit and miss in the playoffs. They had their moments, no question about that. Goudreau had overtime winner or game seven winner there, so it's not like they didn't show up, but I expected more from that line, I think. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Tkachuk. He is what you think of when you think playoff players. Big, physical, can score, can fight, can play through just about anything, a nightmare in a matchup. So, yeah, he didn't have that X factor that you were probably hoping to see from him. That being said, he still had a somewhat decent playoff.
Yeah, I mean, he still had. I mean, it's the points were there. It's just about coming up in big moments that didn't happen. But at the same time, I mean, the way McDavid and Draisaitl have been going, I'm not sure anybody stops it. Like, even if they do end up facing Colorado, like, what do you think of their chances as long as those two players are dominating the way they are?
Yeah, I'm praying for Colorado to make it through St. Louis, because there is one player in this league who has some of that McDavid over him, and that's obviously MacKinnon. He has the same. The same step can beat guys with the same ease, it looked like. He plays at a different level as well. So I'd love to see those two run into each other. Now Colorado is a lot more complete team than Edmonton has seen up until now. We thought Calgary was that as well, but Colorado really feels like they can lay it on teams. And again, Mike Smith is still the question mark in Edmonton. There's no question they can score. Their defense is not their Achilles heel. He's between the pipes, and he still finds way to give up these goals that you're just scratching your head. It's like, how does this happen to this guy? Not over and over again, but at a somewhat steady pace. And again, if you do that, I think against Colorado, it'll come out to come back and bite you, because this team is, I feel like, a step above everybody else in this league right now. Granted, everybody can beat everybody. But again, the matchup of MacKinnon against McDavid is one I'm really looking forward to see.
Yannick, we appreciate the time as always. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
There's Yannick Hansen. Joins us every Friday here on Canuck Central.
Terrific as always.
An absolute beautician, as we like to say.
Said it was no goal. Should have not counted.
Yep. Definitely no goal. It's like you guys are kind of on the fence, though. You're like, it should be allowed, but it's not a goal.
No, it's not a goal, but it should be allowed.
Yeah.
Both things can be true at the same time. I love using that. I love using that phrase because it's so good. But anyways, it's true. I agree. I'm sitting here saying it should have been no goal. But I think in the future, you should allow that play to be a goal.
I think every Calgary Flames fan has a right to be upset today.
Well, they are. They're even texting into our show. So it tells you everything you need to know.
And it's a tough one for them. Look, they're probably losing the series no matter what. As Yannick mentioned, and as everybody knows, they weren't playing well enough. Marshall wasn't playing well enough. It was a matter of time. Whether it was last night or it was game six at Edmonton, Calgary was going to lose that series. And it's kind of scary because this team was all in. Mm-hmm. This was a big push from Brad Treliving, who was very much kind of in the same position as Jim Benning last summer in that, like, all right, you're getting one more kick at the can, except his bets worked out, right? A lot of them did, and the team really played well under Daryl Sutter this year. But Johnny Gaudreau is an unrestricted free agent. You talk to people in Calgary, they're not too optimistic he'll be coming back, as much as the Flames are probably going to throw a blank check at him. Matthew Tkachuk is probably going to accept his QO and go to free agency next summer as a 25, 26-year-old. So you may have a decision of, do we just go forward with this for 1 year, or do we trade a player and then not lose him for anything? They've got a ton of other contracts that they've got to work out, Mangiapane and some other ones. This is a major crossroads for the Calgary Flames this offseason.
Massive one. And even Mangiapane, for instance.
Yeah.
Is he going to be
Mangiapane.
Worth... Mangiapane. Apologies, Dan. Are you going to get whatever money you're paying him? Is that going to be worth it? He scored 30 goals.
35.
So is he getting paid less than $5 million? There's no way.
He's got to be around the Brian Rust contract, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
So
he's a 30-goal scorer. I know he doesn't have a long track record, so maybe you try to bridge him at a shorter number, but...
Because, I mean, he had more goals than assists.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be
more goals.
He's not going to be scoring a ton of points. But my point is, like, if he becomes a 25 goal scorer, even,
yeah,
he's a 40 point guy, 45 point guy, and very much as a second liner. That's tough. So even him, what decision do you make on him? And if you're committing to the core, do you have space to pay Tkachuk what he wants? And it seems like based on what Eric Francis told us when he was on this radio station last week while on this show, and he mentioned that he thinks they're going to qualify him, and then he probably hits free agency, and that Goudreau's probably walking.
Yeah.
So what do you do next year? I mean, with the amount of money they have on the books, like you mentioned, how do you don't rebuild, you can't. So, how do you kickstart it again, especially if you lose Goudreau?
So you lose Goudreau, you're left with basically Tkachuk, Lindholm, Mangiapane, Toffoli, Coleman. That's your main forward group. You're still pretty set on D with guys like Anderson, Hanifin, and Tanev. And you hope Markstrom bounces back. You've definitely got to find a way to play him less next year.
You need a better backup. You got to pay for that backup.
It's like the Tkachuk thing. There's been a lot of rumors around Tkachuk in the past. And a lot of people have linked him to St. Louis, where his dad played for a ton of years, obviously. Mm-hmm. Do you revisit that if he just accepts the QO? Is it a situation where you say, we can't afford to lose this player for nothing?
If you lose Goudreau for nothing, which is a distinct possibility.
Yeah. And one where it's like, we felt we had a real chance to go on a long playoff run, so we're taking this chance with Johnny Goudreau. And that they had every right with the way their season was going to make that bet.
And let's not forget, Johnny struggled.
Yeah,
the last couple of years before this, too. So a lot of people said it's okay to take your time and not overcommit to this guy. And then he blew up this year and had a massive season. But here's the reality for a team like the Calgary Flames. If you're not bringing back Goudreau, if he leaves, That leaves you, as far as impact players in the same realm as Johnny Gaudreau available, Nazem Kadri, Yevgeny Malkin. Those are the only two guys.
Well, Forsberg is a 40-goal scorer.
Forsberg, so. Too. Yeah, sorry. And Forsberg. Those three guys. Those are the only three players on the market that are in the same class as Gaudreau. Do you land one of those three guys? And even Malkin, I mean...
Yeah, you're not getting Malkin.
Probably not. So it comes down to Kadri. Do you pay Kadri?
Kadri already rejected a trade to Calgary once.
So there you go. Do you land Forsberg? Does he want to go to Calgary?
Are you paying him $9, $10 million?
Maybe you have to. My point is, if you're losing Gaudreau and you don't land one of those guys, how do you justify losing Tkachuk for nothing too, potentially?
Yeah. It's tough. How do you replace 240 goal scorers? So I think if you were thinking about this as a Canucks fan, you're looking at it and saying, well, Calgary might be a team we may be able to gain on next year, depending on how their offseason goes.
And even if they bring Gaudreau back, this was very much like a peak year for this team. Do they replicate this year?
It's going to be hard. They've also been a team that's like one good year, one bad year, one good year, one bad year, right? And that's kind of how they've gone the last number. All right, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, we are Canucks Central. Coming up, Jack Michaels on the scene in Edmonton as they get ready for a Western Conference final. That's next on Sportsnet 6. This hour is brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your plumbing and heating wholesaler, a proud family-owned BC company helping local business since 1892. If you missed hour one of this Canuck Central Friday edition, well, you missed Yannick Hansen, his take on whether or not the Blake Coleman goal should have been a goal, or was it the right call of a no goal? You can listen to that on the podcast. Should be up now. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We also discussed some of Jim Rutherford's topics on our friends Donnie and Dolly show on Czech TV today, and a little bit of a Bo versus Miller extension conversation that you can indulge on as well. So the Edmonton Oilers are through to the Western Conference Final. They will await the winner of Colorado and St. Louis. That series could obviously come to an end tonight. You'll hear it on Sportsnet 650. Leon Draisaitl had 17 points. Leon Draisaitl, 17 points in this series.
In five games. That's pretty good.
It's not bad. It's more than 3 points a game. I tweeted last night facetiously, by the end of this series, he will have more playoff assists than Wayne Gretzky.
It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd what he's doing. And he's doing it on one leg.
Yeah.
And the way he's just shaking guys off, like Yannick mentioned, mm-hmm. I mean, he like puts guys on his hip. He turns on guys that can't do anything.
Yeah.
And he's just, I don't know. He's an incredible hockey player.
I don't know. Like, if you had to vote for the Conn Smythe today, do you vote Leon or Connor?
Still Connor.
Yeah.
Because as good as Leon's been, it's been very much like accruing points and dominating the puck, and when he has it offensively, the way McDavid is just controlling play and creating speed and mismatch and just absolutely putting teams on their heels. I mean, the amount of chances he creates is unreal, and the amount of attention he brings. The orbit around him is, it opens up a lot of things. As good as Draisaitl is, it helps him a lot with McDavid and the space he creates. I'd love to say it. I'd love to make a case for Draisaitl, but to me, it's still McDavid.
Yeah, it's
making a bigger impact overall still.
It's one of those things. You know, Malkin in 09 was far and away the best offensive player for the Penguins when they beat the Red Wings that year. I think he had 36 points in that playoff campaign, and he won the Conn Smythe that year. Sidney Crosby didn't win his Conn Smythe until 2016, 2015, and 16, when Pittsburgh won then. So, you know, it doesn't always go to the guy, as Connor McDavid would be the Sidney Crosby in this situation, but McDavid has been so, so good. Like, did we undersell the Oilers, or is this basically just their formula? We need to start getting some saves and let those guys do their thing.
Well, two things. You're right. I mean, saves is such a big part of their...
Yeah. I mean, it's It's like the thing about the playoffs. Like, are we getting saves?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, but, we need that.
But Connor hadn't yet gone off yet in the postseason. You know, what they needed was as soon as Connor McDavid gets going in the playoffs, and as soon as Leon Draisaitl get going, that's when they're going to be absolutely scary. Because in his first postseason, McDavid had 9 points in 13 games. Then he had 9 and 4.
If I remember correctly, he was great in their first round, and then Kessler got to him.
Yeah, I mean, that Ducks team was just next level, right? I mean, you know, they got to him and everything.
Kessler was just a hound over him.
Now, in the play-in, technically didn't make the playoffs. He had 9 points in 4 games, but they didn't get past.
Yeah.
They didn't make it into the playoffs, technically, right? And last year, he had 4 points in 4 games. But as soon as he started playing the same way he does in regular season and dominates, this team is almost unstoppable. And when Connor goes and Draisaitl goes and they get saves,
yeah,
they're terrifying.
Well, and it's... They just got to play smart hockey beyond those guys, and you know that's kind of what they did. Certainly after game one of the series, and since Jay Woodcroft took over midseason. Let's bring in our next guest, play-by-play voice for the Edmonton Oilers. It's Jack Michaels. Thanks for this, Jack. How's it going?
It's going well. I'm out on the golf course. I've got to hit one shot while we talk, but I'll have you on speaker, so you'll be able to tell by my agonizing shrill voice that I probably snap hooked one into the water, but other than that, we're good.
I thought the Flames were the ones golfing today.
Well, that's true. and you know what, Edmonton, I think you know, some of your comments with respect to McDavid and Draisaitl, and McDavid understandably gets, you know, so much credit, but I mean, Leon Draisaitl just set a record for points in a playoff series, and I don't know whether you know this, but it was a 5-game series. I mean,
yeah.
And I don't know whether you know this, but he's got at least 2 injuries that I know of. And so, I mean, he's just, Edmonton won because its supposed disadvantage, Smith versus Markstrom, turned out to be nothing. I was on another of your, I think I was on your morning show, and I said, watch out for Jacob Markstrom. Historically, he has not played well against Edmonton, and if I were Calgary, I would not have the kind of faith that a lot of people seem to have. I know he had a great season, but against Edmonton the last 2 years, he just hasn't had it. And the other thing is, last 3 games, top lines, Edmonton 25 points, Calgary 2. You have no chance when your top players aren't close to good enough and your goaltending isn't close to good enough.
Well, and the other reality is when McDavid and Draisaitl put up that amount of points, you're talking about... Even if Calgary played well, I'm not sure that would have been enough to stop these guys. I mean, that's the level these guys are at. So, I mean, even if Markstrom was a little bit better and those guys produce a little bit more, I still think Edmonton wins this series, even if it goes 7.
Well, you're probably right. But, I mean, again, from a Calgary perspective, you know, you really have some questions because of how badly they were outplayed. You know, it's one thing to go down playing the way you did to rack up 111 points and 50 wins and win the division. It's another thing to go down playing not near your best. I mean, Edmonton played reasonably well, but to be honest with you guys, if you watch that series closely, Edmonton played okay. Calgary's level dropped and dropped significantly. And I think a good part of that was their identity. They just had nothing on the defensive side of things. And again, credit Edmonton for some of that. But last I knew, Calgary was in the NHL all season long.
Yeah, you know, the thing about that is, I think once Markstrom stopped making saves and couldn't make any saves, it just changed the entire dynamic of the series because Calgary started to force
some... I just fanned one into the water, by the way. I blame you guys for that.
Well, we'll take the blame.
You're swimming today, Jack. I was just saying, you know, like, it's bad enough when you're not getting any saves, but... You know, now all of a sudden you got to start forcing things if you're Calgary to, and it changes your identity from being a defensive team rather than a run and gun team. But once Markstrom stopped making saves, it just changed everything. I wanted to get your take on Jay Woodcroft though, and how he's changed this team. I mean, they're in such a better spot than they were mid-season under Dave Tippett.
Well, I think one of the reasons for that is because of the inclusivity that Jay Woodcroft has brought to the table. And part of that is his familiarity with the players. I mean, he was an assistant when this core was first being established in 2017 under the direction of Todd McClellan. And he was also a big part of the younger players, you know, guys like Ryan McLeod and Kyler Yamamoto and Evan Bouchard, their development with Bakersfield, you know, as head coach of the minor league team. So he had the best of both worlds. And then you acquire Zach Hyman in the offseason, and you bring in Evander Kane in the midseason. And I would say, you know, in terms of parachuting in as a midseason arrival, no one's had the impact that Evander Kane has had since Wayne Gretzky missed the first half of the 92-93 campaign. And we know what happened in the back half of that campaign. That's, you know, that's been a huge difference as well. So it's the timeliness of the acquisition of Evander Kane, bringing an element to the Edmonton Oilers that they had for so many years lacked, and really achieving it kind of twofold, because you brought in another player in the offseason that had some of those same attributes in Zach Hyman. And Kane's a finisher. And guys, in today's pass-first NHL, guys like David Perron and Evander Kane, it's no surprise they're top two in scoring in the National Hockey League, because neither of them has ever met a shot they don't like. And so much of, you know, the one thing that drives us nuts about our sport, at least in my opinion, is just when we get, you know, on guys for being selfish. Mm-hmm. Someone has to shoot the puck into the net, okay? Not everyone can be a pass-first guy. And I love guys like Kane and Perron who will shoot from anywhere and everywhere, because that's the only way you're going to score. And Evander Kane not only finishes, but he powers that puck into the back of the net. It's hitting the back of the net with authority, whether it's a tap. I mean, he just shoots it with authority. And again, I mean, those four players combined with Mike Smith badly outplaying Jacob Markstrom. And the other thing I'll say is the overlooked Oilers defense.
Yeah.
And again, that's where Jay Woodcroft would tell you that in tandem with Dave Manson, the arrival and Manson overseeing a lot of these, you know, young defensemen, including Evan Bouchard. But earlier in the season, when they had to get by with, you know, guys like Niemelainen and Broberg in their lineup on a regular basis, part of the reason they were able to navigate those rough waters was the fact that Manson had a familiarity with those guys, you know, in the American Hockey League. And Dave Manson, you know, for those who just remember him, a tough guy, let's not forget this guy was an all-star. This guy was an extra D-man. This guy could put up points. This guy could fight. This guy basically played every role that you need to in the National Hockey League. And I think having a guy like that, you know, on a defense that's, you know, perpetually getting run down for not being amongst the NHL's best, there's a real identification with an assistant coach who can empathize with nearly every role that a defenseman at some point or another plays on an NHL roster. And another underrated acquisition is Duncan Keith.
Yeah.
You know, people want to say, well, he's not a $6 million player anymore. I'll tell you what, he's a valuable player. And playing alongside Evan Bouchard, having a guy with that kind of veteran guile and savvy has been invaluable and a real steadying influence, in my opinion.
Well, and one guy, Jack, I think has been pretty underrated and was a really shrewd pickup at the deadline was Brett Kulak. And getting a guy like that who's good defensively and just kind of rounds out the defense, a bit of a quiet acquisition, but just watching him and how steady he's been, I really think he was a really sneaky good addition that really stabilized that back end, too.
It's actually an excellent point you make. I mean, it really is. And another guy who's had recent experience, you know, on a team that's gone deep. You know, so it's not just Duncan Keith telling war stories from his days in Chicago.
Yeah.
You've got a guy with a decent run who's a better skater than I think a lot of people give him credit for. Kulak has the ability to skate himself out of trouble. And just a steadying presence, another NHL guy back there, so that Chris Russell doesn't have to play every game. I mean, right now, you got a guy like Chris Russell who's played 900 games in the National Hockey League as your extra defenseman. I mean, moving forward, and I believe the Oilers, you know, will continue to get banged up like every team and go a little bit deeper into their roster. Now, instead of plucking up a, you know, maybe a young, inexperienced guy because you got Kulak, Chris Russell would be the next man up. And I mean, Chris Russell's the kind of guy who can fall out of bed and give you 15 decent minutes. And so the Oilers have, I think, better depth than people give them credit for. Darnell Nurse is playing hurt and, like Draisaitl, really gutting it out. And, you know, he scored a big goal the other night. But more importantly, I think he's managing, like Draisaitl, his injuries to the effect that he's not extending himself, getting himself out of position, And I'm not going to go completely coach speak on you, but what I mean by managing your injury is inevitably you, and I dare say it, simplify your game a little bit. And I don't like leaning on that cliche, but when you're dealing with something and you just focus on getting through and not trying to get yourself not, and knowing that you can't do everything you'd like to do, sometimes that actually helps your game. And Darnell Nurse has been a rock back there. And the other thing Woodcroft has done, just to circle back to your earlier point, is the allocation of minutes are better. And I know McDavid and Draisaitl are playing a lot, but you don't see Darnell Nurse playing 27, 28 minutes anymore. He's basically got all six defensemen playing around 20 minutes a game. It's been remarkable how Jay and Dave Manson have managed that situation so effectively.
Jack, you got a mulligan on us, all right, for that one that went in the drink.
Well, I'm going to need about three more, so maybe we need a longer segment next time.
Appreciate it, Jack. Thanks for this today.
Always a pleasure, guys. Take care.
There is Jack Michaels joining us here on Canuck Central. It is kind of remarkable the turnaround the Oilers had, because they kind of went into – now, they had the great start, so they had a margin for error, but they went into a similar tailspin that the Canucks did.
Yeah.
Right? And they have come out much better on the other side, as have the Canucks after the organizational changes. But it got to a situation where Dave Tippett was untenable. And Jay Woodcroft, as Jack pointed out on a few different occasions there, has really done a lot of good things. And I've even been more impressed after, you know, how he managed his bench through this series against Calgary.
Yeah, I think he's done a terrific job. And one of the things he did really well and he adjusted was really leaning into McDavid and Draisaitl. You know, it's like, you play them.
Yeah, play until and you know what? He wasn't doing it at first.
No, he wasn't.
In the LA series.
No, he wasn't. And then he started playing them until wheels come off. That's what you have to do. Those, you run them until they can't play anymore.
Yeah.
That's all you got.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I do think Edmonton's top six is underrated. Like, once you go through their top six, and I think Zach Hyman, who I've been critical of, has been terrific, and he got a lot better as the series went on.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he's playing, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Evander Kane, and then your sixth best forward is like Kaori Yamamoto.
Yeah.
Who's like a 40-point guy, 20 goals. He's got, 6 points in 12 playoff games. So their top six is pretty well-rounded. So
you're sleeping on Puljujärvi, man.
Puljujärvi's actually playing on the third line, really.
Yeah. Well, him and Yamamoto kind of switch
back and forth. Yeah. But even him, great point. I mean, they got seven guys who are like top six forwards.
Yeah.
So their top six is underrated. The other guys, I think you're just kind of piecing it together. It's not great. But I think your top six, you can really lean into those guys.
Fogle, I thought, was going to be a better fit for them.
Yeah.
Hasn't really worked out, though. You know, he came in later in the series and played decently. Everything is so much easier when you have Leon and Connor.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, they're your advantage.
They are your advantage. Lean into it. And sometimes, the Leafs were going through this a couple years ago where with Mike Babcock, where Matthews was getting like 18 minutes a night in the playoffs. Like, you're in a game seven. Like, why? Like, run your superstar into the ground, man. There is no tomorrow.
Yeah.
Who gives a bleep if he plays 22 minutes tonight?
Listen, if you lose because you got everything you could out of your best players,
yeah,
then your team's not good enough and you did everything you could.
Yeah.
But never leave juice in the bottle when you lose.
Yeah. Never leave something left in the tank on your stars, especially if they're playing well. And the Oilers are in a really good spot here. I love the Kulak move. We've talked about that a bunch on this show. I've always liked Kulak as a player, even going back to his Montreal days. Evan Bouchard. Now, you know, you could throw this caveat pretty much out there for every young defenseman and almost every defenseman sat in the league. As we call it on the show, it's a lost art defending in your own end. And Bouchard definitely is a bit of an adventure when he has to do some actual defending. But he's been a real good find. Like, he's come along offensively, helped the Oilers push the puck from the back end. He's got that huge shot from the point that we saw on a couple of different occasions.
I will say this. I mean, we're sitting here and giving Edmonton a lot of credit. And yes, 100%.
We'll see how it goes against McKinnon.
Evan Bouchard can be turned around.
Yeah.
Defensively, there are some problems. Like, he's, I think I think they're actually better off.
What young defenseman in the league, though, is really sound defensively?
No, fair enough.
There are definitely better ones than Bouchard. But you know, we've talked about it with Makar. Hughes gets that kind of a rap. There's a ton of defensemen that just don't know how to defend on their own anymore.
100%. But what's Bouchard's maybe biggest weakness? Skating?
Yeah.
They might be facing Colorado.
That's a problem.
It's about the matchup, too. So I think that's a guy, especially when he's playing as much as he's playing, over 20 minutes a game, playing a big, big role for this team. Even Duncan Keith. I mean, Calgary's a fast team, but because Edmonton was able to dictate the pace for a lot of it because of how much they played McDavid and Draisaitl, Calgary's speed never really became an issue. It wasn't really able to manifest itself. They didn't have a ton of natural speed either. They played really fast too, right? Some speedy wingers and everything, but not a super fast team from the back end either. If they face Colorado, that's a lot of speed coming at Edmonton. I think that's a matchup problem for them. The question just comes down to what can Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl do for you?
Torgy, listening live, I'm a huge fan of Hyman. Zach Hyman, great player. You know what's funny, though? Listening to Leaf fans' tears or seeing their tears of all the ex-Leafs that are having great playoffs.
Cody Ceci.
Kadri, Hyman.
Ceci's actually been pretty good for them. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a Ceci guy, but in this postseason so far, he's been fine. But again, like I think their defense, as good as it's been, I think that's where it becomes a problem against a team like Colorado.
Yeah, 100%.
I think their best bet is the Blues somehow come back and win this series.
We'll see about that tonight. Bet on hockey like never before with Play Now Sports, your local BC sportsbook. That is the lone game on the sked here in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. And it's coming up here on Sportsnet 650. The Colorado Avalanche are favored even on the road, and why wouldn't they be? They are the better team. They just could not close out their previous series or that previous game. It really just comes down to, Sat, how much you trust in Colorado to get rid of their demons, pretty much, because when they're losing games, they're just mostly getting in their own way.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the biggest issue. And even Edmonton against Colorado, I think they have a lot of matchup issues if that happens. But I think it can be really spicy because some of the issues Colorado does have. Ultimately, too much of an advantage not to win this series. But this is a tough one. Like, I don't like betting Avs tonight in St. Louis for Game 6.
Yeah. Avs are 160 on the money line. Blues are 240. On the money line.
They're the home team.
So you're getting pretty good juice for the home team here.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, there's just no value to bet on
Colorado.
Colorado.
It's a tough one. But that is the lone game on the sked for tonight. Now, you know, we are in our Play Now segment here. Bet on hockey like never before with Play Now Sports, your local BC sportsbook. But there is a game this weekend that I do want to take a look at, Sat. It's outside of the hockey world. Liverpool and Real Madrid. It is the Champions League final tomorrow. And it is, you're getting a little bit of juice on Liverpool, 205. And they're the favorite. Madrid comes in as the underdog, 340 on the money line. But all they've done is take down teams that, well, the betting lines thought they shouldn't have beat.
Yes.
And we'll see if they can continue that.
And they're taking out English clubs. They took out Chelsea. Yeah. They took out Man City. Now they're facing Liverpool.
Ripping through the Prem.
And the Prem's like the best league right now, and they're just ripping through it. And they're doing it on the backs of some brilliant moments.
Yeah.
You know, they're not really playing all that well, but the value's too good. It's a single match.
Yeah.
It's like
one
Real.
Match.
I like Real.
Real Madrid, Liverpool looking to get their, Madrid looking to get the revenge on Liverpool from a few years ago in that Champions League final. It's man, it's a good match. Karim Benzema is an incredible player. Has been, should be the Ballon d'Or winner this year because of how well he's played. Liverpool, though, they're the better overall team. We'll see if the old men of Real Madrid can do the deed. Real Madrid, that's the pick for tomorrow's Champions League final. Coming up, the mailbag. Mailbag Friday here on Canuck Central on Sportsnet 650.